Okay, good morning, everyone. Today on our menu, we have pogroms, spies, and wine. Because we are visiting a beautiful, can I use the word quaint? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Quaint town just on the southern edge of the Carmel, not far from Haifa. In Hebrew, it's referred to as Zichron, but its formal name is Zichron Yaakov. And part of the reason why this makom, this place, speaks to us, first and foremost, is because of the name. One of the most significant concepts in Yadus is the notion of Zikaron, of memory, of remembering. How do I know this? Because we know that in our tradition, everything follows the beginning. The tchila, the beginning of something, carries with it the entirety of that experience, and then it just plays out over time. But the Ikaron, it's all wrapped into the beginning. For example, the first time you find a word in the Torah, that teaches you something about the trajectory of that word. The first time you find a place, teaches you something about the future. The first day of the Jewish year, the first day on the calendar, is Yom HaZikaron. It's a day of Zikaron. So the concept of Zichronos, of remembering, is essential to Yiddishkeit. When the Torah concludes, Moshe Rabbeinu tells us, Sha'alavicha v'yageitcha zekeinecha v'yomrulach. Ask your parents, ask your grandparents. That is the shape and the contours of our identity. Rav Soloveitchik, Zichr Tzadik Levracha, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, was fond of observing that the Jewish people transcend time. We connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the Ribono Shel Olam, who in a way that's hard for us to understand, but whatever this means, he has a name that has four letters of Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey, which mean Haya, Hove, and Yiyeh. So what does it mean, Haya, Hove, and Yiyeh? It means that the Ribono Shel Olam is not bound. Thank you. Yeah. Is not bound by the limits of time. So even though we exist today in the year Tuf Shin Pei, but our experience, our neshama experience transcends, our soul transcends time, which is why Zikaron is so important. There's a very wonderful book. I'm not endorsing the end of it. It's a little bit apikorsis, but the beginning of it is very good. By Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi, called Zachor. And it's about Jewish memory. And the idea that for Chazal, if you look through the Gemara, history, not so important. The Gemara, many Ma'amori Chazal, especially in the Medrash, they are ahistorical, which means they have no connection to history at all. They sound like they're beyond time. And that's because they are beyond time. That's because Chazal and our Masorah are not really interested so much in history. We are much more interested in memory. The night of the Seder, we don't sit down and read a history book. We re-experience a memory which becomes alive to us. So Zikaron, Zichronos, is not history. It's the idea of memory, specifically a living memory, something which is relevant to us. It defines us. It has a connection to us, even though it existed far in the past. Zikaron is very important. And there's a particular Zikaron here. There are more sheets here in the front for those who need. The particular Zikaron that I want to think about today both informs us about our capacity, what we can accomplish, and also gives us an appreciation for what people did accomplish. So on the one hand, it makes us feel like we could do this. On the other hand, as we will see in a minute, it also makes us feel like very tiny compared to what these people did. So I'm going to give some background and then focus on that particular Zikaron. In 1870, there was a French horticulturalist whose name was Netter, N-E-T-T-E-R, and he founded the first agricultural school in the modern Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael. 1870. 1881 begins a series of on and off 2 years of something which we now are very familiar with, but at that time actually was not so common. We call it in English or Yiddish, we call it a pogrom. Until 1881, if you were living in the Pale of Settlement, life was, it was wretched, but it was relatively peacefully wretched. In 1881, in April, in a Ukrainian province, in a town called Elisavtograd, my Russian is very strong, you know, which then was fomented by the assassination of Alexander II. The truth is, this pogrom took place in April. The assassination was in March, but there was some upset before this. And then later in April, on the 27th of April, there was a massive 3-day pogrom in Kiev, which is, I think, probably one of the most famous pogroms of this period of 1881. Into 1882, you're talking about people being murdered, brutally attacked, women being attacked all around various towns. And this idea of a pogrom became not just, you know, an occasional phenomenon, but became a reality of ongoing life and fear of Jews living in Tsarist Russia. Very difficult. Very difficult. That's number two. Third historical phenomenon, which is now linking these two, is that in 1882 and throughout the 1880s, what becomes the a concurrent response to this onset of pogroms? What's that? Yes, political Zionism, which had started, kind of the nascent beginnings of that had begun several years earlier, especially in religious circles with Rav Alkalai, but now there is a great sense of urgency. So the Chibas Tzion movement, which is led by non-religious Zionists, secular Zionists, but there are some significant religious personalities who are involved in the Chibas Tzion movement, who are interested in participating. Good morning. So now the Chovevei Tzion movement has people up and talking about a political movement to get out of Russia because things are so bad. So you put all these things together, and then you have what we call the First Aliyah. The First Aliyah spans from 1882 until 1904. That's the kind of the general period. And this is the background to the first piece that you see on your Mar Makomos page. This section in the middle, this is actually a Xerox copy. If you go today to Zichron and you go to the museum, this is called the First Aliyah Museum, and this is what you get when you go in. This is the museum guide. It's a beautiful, I was there. They have exhibits like the plastic mannequin guy with a pitchfork, you know, shoveling like the settlement, that kind of thing. So it's a beautiful little museum, and this is what you get when you go to the museum, First Aliyah Museum. You see what it describes. Although there has been a constant presence of Jews in the land of Israel for over three millennia, since the exile, after the destruction of the Second Temple, most Jews lived in the diaspora. They prayed and dreamt about returning to their ancestral homeland. The people of the first Aliyah were the courageous pioneers who turned dreams into actions and initiated the modern return of the Jews to their homeland. They left their places of birth, that's Romania, Russia, and Yemen, starting in the 1880s to face the grueling challenges of transforming the desolate land into thriving communities. These dedicated families and individuals laid out the infrastructure and established 28 moshavot, making subsequent aliyot possible and the eventual creation of the State of Israel. So, here we have it. The beginnings of the Yishuv HaChadash in 1882. Where is this museum located? In Zichron. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's there today. I went there. Yeah. You could see it. You can go there. Ah. In 1881, there was a tiny Arab village, and it was called Zamarin. This village was an Arab village. Why is it called Zamarin? Maybe. Some suggest it was called Zamarin after the Hebrew word Shomron, which is kind of strange because Zichron is not near the Shomron. But it might be more related to Zimra or Zemer or Zimras Haaretz. Maybe. Maybe. Although at that time, there were no grapes in this area. Jews began to arrive here in 1882. We mentioned this sefer once before. It goes back to our word Zikaron, Zichronos. This sefer called Zichronos Eretz Yisrael, put together by Avram Yari. It's not on your page, but I'm going to read to you very briefly. There is an entry here from a man by the name of David Yudalevich. You can Google him. He is, is this stereotypical to say he looks like a quintessential secular Zionist in his Wikipedia picture? He's like clean-shaven with a beautiful, like, handlebar, mustache-esque type of thing. Like, it's very put together, proper. He's coming to Israel. He ultimately settles in Rishon LeZion. He becomes a very prominent educator. He's involved in the settlement and agriculture of Ahule. He's a very well-known, established teacher. He's arriving in Israel with a group of Jews who are coming from Europe. Now, the first people to come to Zichron, to this place, at that time it was called Zamarin, were 100 Jews from Romania. What is it like? So he has a description of what it was like on the boat and how they were turned away from Turkey. And then they ended up drifting in the ocean. They went to Lebanon. Finally, they were given permission by, who would give them permission at this time? British. No, who's there? That's right, the Ottomans. The Ottomans, exactly. The Ottomans have to give them permission, and they land at a port. Which port do you think they land? That's right. They land at Haifa. So they get off in Haifa, and he describes how they had over 170 people on this boat. They had men, women, children, all ages. They're coming here. They get to Haifa. They disembark. Now, he introduces in this passage, Hamityashvim Olim Al Hakarka. The settlers, Olim, they go up to settle in the land. This is first-hand account. So he says, I'm going to collect for you a couple of people who I know, who described to me, Yudalevich writes, what it was like going up there. Mityashev Echad, and in the footnote they tell you his name. His name was Yerachmiel Halperin. Now, I never lived in Romania in 1880. But you can imagine, what did these people know about agriculture, about pioneering? They knew kemat nothing. And they took the meager belongings that they had. They set out. They come to this place. And he says, Biyom Sheni, Sheish B'December 1882. Yom Sheni means? Monday, December 6th, 1882. Now here's what's so interesting, at least to me. This is, you could see on the page, this is one section of the book. The next section is another parallel description of going to this place, we're going to call it Zichron in a minute, but right now it's still called Zamarin, an Arab village. The second one is another Mityashev. His name is Yitzchak Goldstein. He probably called him Itcha. He says, when did we get there? He says, Berishon Lachanuka. Now, how do I know if this is corroborated? So you go online, tehipcal.com, and you plug in 6th December 1882. Bingo. It shows up 25th of Kislev. It's exactly the same story. Exactly the same day. They're telling the mamash the same story. You can check it on your own. So he says, on Monday, December 6th, Alina, free translation, Alina Lemoshav Zamarin. We went to this Moshav Zamarin. He says, Kaninu Machreshot Yeshanot Me'it HaGermanim Bechefa. We bought old plows from a bunch of Germans in Haifa. V'nigashnu B'meretz La'avoratenu. And we got right to our work with alacrity. Mi b'machrashto, who was having his plow? Bi b'ma'adrado, who is using his hoe? And they start working v'kach zaranu, and that's how we planted. Kasher alinu l'makom. He says, when we got to this place, matzanu bo, we found there 16 mishpachot aravim. The only people living there were 16 Arab families. And he says, hityashavnu ba'arba'a batim aravim. We lived in 4 Arab houses. That's what it was. They were the first people. There were no Jews. Right? What was the first yeshuv? We haven't talked about it yet this year. First yeshuv was Petach Tikva. But around the same time, just after that, here in Zichron, in Zamarin, it was called. He says, Matsanu et admat Zamarin zrua avanim. We saw that the ground was zrua avanim. What does it mean, zrua avanim? Zrua means planted. What was planted in the earth? Rocks. He said it was so rocky. It was impossible for a plow to go through the ground to plow it.
So why did they go there? The pilgrims said, Indian village, let's go settle with them.
Good question. I'm not sure. They went to a bunch of different places around this time. This is not the only one. There's another one nearby called Binyamina. There are Petach Tikva, Rishon Lezion. There were a bunch of Moshavot. I think there were over 20 initially. Mm-hmm. They went to different places.
Usually people, we immigrated to the United States. It was like, oh, my uncle is in Detroit.
Ah, yes. But here's the thing. Where are people living? So there was an old yeshuv in Yerushalayim. The whole point of this was to settle the land. So find a place where you can build something in the land. And it was all like this. So what happens? These people come. They start trying to plant. Yes, there is one agricultural school, but they basically don't know what they're doing. The yeshuv, they begin, and they're not successful. And then, soon thereafter, they get a lifeline. That's right. A French, what do you call him? Benefactor. But in Israel, in Hebrew, how do you call a benefactor? Nadiv. So if you go to Zichron today, you go down you'll see there is, right as part of Zichron, there's a beautiful garden next door. It's called Ramat HaNadiv. Who is buried in Ramat HaNadiv? His remains were put there in 1954. Baron Rothschild, because after that first attempt by these 100 Romanian Jews failed to grow anything, they were going to die. It was going to collapse. But Baron Rothschild, who was a Jewish philanthropist, he was part of the banking family, the famous Rothschild banking family. He was French. He decided he was going to assist this nascent yeshuv. Now, there is an interesting book, by the way. We're not going to get into it today. There is an interesting book. It's called, Zionism and Technocracy. It's published by the University of Indiana about the actual running of these yeshuvim, of how much were they administrated by the people in Chutz Laretz, by the wealthy people who were paying for it, versus the local people who wanted independence. They want chalutzim, they wanted to be pioneers. It's an old, interesting story. Ayin Sham, if you're interested in that, take a look over there. But Rothschild, he decides he's going to invest and basically salvage this yeshuv. So after a year, what do they call the yeshuv? They don't call it this moshav. They don't call it anymore Zammarin, which was the Arabic name. They call it Zichron Yaakov. Why Zichron Yaakov? Because his father's name was Yankel. So that's why they called it Zichron Yaakov. Because Rothschild bailed them out, and it's named after his father.
So did they work with the Arabs? I mean, there were four families there.
So it was not uncommon that Jews and Arabs intermingled a lot. Sometimes that was a good thing, but a lot of times it was very problematic in those years. We didn't get to Petach Tikva yet, but when we get to Petach Tikva in the Zichronos, Yari has some hair-raising descriptions of Arab marauders attacking their moshav. So I don't know. You have to know more history to know.
Families were there first.
Yes, so. You have to know each place what their relationships were like. I don't know that level of knowledge. I don't have that information. So now here is the new name of this place. It's called Zichron Yaakov. But I stop for a second. I say Zichron. Do we realize what these people were like? Could you imagine that? Leaving your entire world behind, as difficult as it was, but chein makom al yoshvav, people appreciate where they live. You pick yourself up from Romania with a couple dozen other people, and you're going to go to a foreign land. There was nothing. There was literally nothing to build something from nothing. It's absolutely mind-boggling. So on the one hand, we say Zichronos, we have the spiritual DNA of those people. Mikam Chol Yisrael, amazing. We have that within us to be pioneers. But also, I feel like when I learn this story, I'm like, man, I'm so small compared to these people.
Were there women and children too?
Yes.
Yeah, family.
He describes on the boat, there was a woman who was giving birth.
Oh,
Yehuda Levitch. Oh, I don't know if they had an epidural or they didn't have an epidural. Yehuda Levitch? I don't know. It's... however you're going to spell it is going to be right and wrong. Yud, Vav, Dalet, Yud, Lamed, Vav, Vez, Yud, Final Tzadi. Yehuda Levitch. So when I Googled him, I found multiple English spellings. So these people are mamish settling the land from the beginning. They're setting up this moshav. It's interesting. Part of the reason why it's quaint is because who was investing in this particular place? Rothschild. Rothschild is from France, so a lot of the architecture of Zichron is distinct from other places. So I saw somewhere where it points out that a lot of Israelis like to vacation, or tourists like to stop. The Israelis like to stop in Zichron because it's kind of a different feel. If you go there, it is a different feel, but it's not so popular, at least where I was reading one of the websites, these tourist websites, not so popular for foreigners, because foreigners want to get more of an Israeli feel, and Zichron is a little bit less Israeli. It's a little distinct.
All birthright kids go there.
Yeah, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying if you go there, you can feel the French influence of the architecture.
Yes, definitely.
The architecture is much more distinct, distinctly French than it is other places in Israel. That's because of the influence of Rothschild. There's another element of Mesiras Nefesh here before we get to the next point that people might be more familiar with. We said we're going to talk about pogroms. We're not going to dwell on that anymore. Must speak with the pogroms. But we said we're going to talk about spies. Because there was a family, their name was Aronson, who had three children, Alexander, Aaron, and Sarah, as we would say, together with a couple of other pioneers, who in 1915 in Zichron founded an organization. Anybody know what it is?
Neely.
That's right. There you go. What's that? There you go. All right, not to be confused with the Kollel Women's Division. And this is where the reminder, the final reminder of the dinner next Sunday night. If you haven't yet signed up, there would, if, without that dinner, there would be no Kollel, no Neely, no MCJL, no Shear. I'd be probably like in the sun in Boca Raton or something like that. I would not be in Chicago. So remember to please make sure if you haven't signed up yet for the dinner next Sunday night, you got to make that call. Anyway, so what's that, Dave?
It's, you know what, it's an acronym.
Yes, what does it stand for?
Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker.
That's right. Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker. Beautiful. The Ribbono Shalom will never let us die, will never let us disappear. So what was the purpose of this Neely organization? The purpose of Neely was because these Jews made a cheshbon. In World War I, it was the British versus the Turks in this neighborhood. And they realized that they were better off having Jews under British rule, although that would not prove to be so geschmack, but better off with the British than with the Turks. So they set up an underground spy network. This underground spy network was based in Zichron with the Aronson family and a few others. At the end, ultimately, unfortunately, members of this group were found. Two of them were executed, and one of them, Sarah Aronson, after she was found, she was interrogated and tortured for 4 days until she got a hold of a gun and she killed herself before being hanged. So this is also Zichronos. We have to tell these stories. People who were Moser Nefesh, literally Moser Nefesh, they gave up their lives. Even the ones who were not hanged, they were put in prison. They were Moser Nefesh for building Klal Yisrael. Amazing.
Mikhail, please. Mostly secular?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's all the more amazing.
Yes. So now we get to the more famous part of Zichron. When you go to Zichron today, which I've had the privilege of doing on several occasions, beautiful, beautiful town. There is a beautiful, long central boulevard, which is how they originally envisioned it, where you had a long boulevard. Today, that boulevard is a pedestrian boulevard. You can't drive on it. You walk up and down. There are shops along the sides, and there are courtyards in the back. It's the original layout of the town. It's much bigger now, of course, than it was in 1900, but they have a beautiful pedestrian mall type of area. If you go to Zichron, the main attraction, what's the big ticket item in Zichron? The winery. The Carmel Winery. Now, why did they have a winery in Zichron? By the way, it wasn't just in Zichron, it was also in another, the first settlement, Rishon, the first, Litzion. Remember, who's influencing this aliyah? Who's funding it? What did Rothschild own, among many other things? A very famous French winery. So he has his chevre who know how to make wine. So they decide they're going to make wine. So actually, they first start planting grapes, and they have a vineyard, and then the entire crop gets wiped out by, like, I forget, it was a virus or a pesticide, some kind of, like, natural disaster that killed all the vineyard. Everything. So they actually had to, I think it was 1903, they had to import strains, specific strains of grapes from the United States to Zichron because they needed to be able to withstand this particular, they have a name for it, I don't remember what it was called. In 1891, the construction of the Zichron Yaakov Winery begins. And the first harvest takes place the next year. And there were a lot of firsts in Zichron because there was so much invested in this. They had, I think, the first telephone line in the modern Israel from the cellar to the other room. They had, if you go on the, I went on the Carmel Winery website, they have a lot of, you know, information and background and history about this winery. The beautiful thing is, you can go there today. You can see it. This is the beginnings of the plantings of Jews in Eretz Israel. The wine, when you buy wine from the Carmel Winery today, there were actually two brands. There was Carmel Wines and Carmel something else. They had an export brand. You look in the history. That's not for us today. That doesn't really concern us so much. But there are wines today that you can buy here in the supermarket that were grown in this area. The Carmel Winery owns vineyards all across Israel, from the north all the way to the south. But when we buy wine, oh, thank you. When we buy wine from Carmel, from Eretz Yisrael, thank you so much. I ready my shahakal, so it'll cover this. We're buying from the same company. It'll turn off in a minute, hopefully. We're buying, you talk about Zikaron, remembering, Zichron Yaakov, remembering? We're buying wine whose story begins with Jews who were Moser Nefesh. They gave up their whole life to settle in this foreign, barren land. It's a Pella. It's amazing. It's an absolute wonder. So you can go there today. When we went, Baruch Hashem, we had the schus to go with our children in November. We couldn't do the tour because you have to be 18. So little kids, but I took the kids just to the shop, to the store, so they could see. First of all, it's that old, classic, very old, you know, yeah, building, and so they could be in the space that these Jews were Moser Nefesh to build a winery. Incredible. Oh. So I wanted to share with you one piece, one beautiful ha'ara when we think about wine and how it relates to us. If you go back to your Marmakomel sheets, you could see on the top left, that's a picture looking down the main pedestrian boulevard in Zichron, and on the top right are barrels in the winery. There's so much to say about wine in the Torah and Jewish tradition, you know, for Kiddush, for Sheva Brachos, what we call Koshal Bracha, for Havdalah. Let's take a step back. There's a tradition that Yayin Yashan, old wine, Chazal say, Das Zikenim Nocha Hemenu. The mind, the Das, the thought of a Zakein, of an elder, appreciates that. If I'm not mistaken, there is one tradition that when Yosef sent to his father, I think he sent him old wine. I think that's what the Medrash says. He sent him old wine. Did you ever think about that? Why is it that the Ribbono Shel Olam made it that wine, it gets better as it ages? How many other food products are there that get better when they age? Right? Not a lot. And even cheese, right? It could also get moldy. Ah. So there's something, and also, no disrespect, cheese is milchig. So like bechlal, you can't get so excited about that. Sorry, I don't mean to offend you. I'm just.
I don't eat it either. What's wrong with cheese?
Nothing. So this is a strange phenomenon. Why is it that wine is better as it's older? Is that just an accident of chemistry? Or is there something by design that the Ribbono Shel Olam made it that there's something about this product which has to be related to the fact of Kos Yeshuos Essa, that when we think about what is it that defines something as a celebratory meal, it's going to be a cup of wine. Lechatchila, you're going to make Kiddush on wine. You're going to make Havdalah on wine. That's for sure Lechatchila, no question. Wine has its own special bracha, because there's an element of wine which is misameach, the Gemara says. It's a little bit soed, it fills you up, but it's misameach, it makes you glad. So what is it about wine that is so important? What do we learn from wine? What can we learn from wine? Especially because wine is the sensitive beverage, because if you are a Nazirite does not drink wine. Wine could lead you down a very unhealthy place. What is the story in the book of Bereshis with the guy kind of a sketchy character who ends up in the mountains with his daughters and too much wine.
Noach.
So wine is complicated. Oh. So there is a beautiful, beautiful, fantastic Shem Yishmuel, which you have on your page, which we're going to look at together. I'm going to translate it. Didn't have it in English, but I'm going to translate it with you. This Shem Yishmuel is Rav Shmuel Borenstein, the Sachachava Rebbe. Oh, okay. So the Sachachava, he's going to quote his father. Who was Rav Shmuel Borenstein's father? The previous Sachachava Rebbe, we call him the Avnei Nezer. He wrote a series of responsa called the Avnei Nezer, Rav Avram Borenstein of Sachachav. So this is the Shem Yishmuel. This piece is written in 1910, and he's going to quote from his father, from the Avnei Nezer, the Eglei Tal. Oh. So the pasuk here that he's talking about is in Parshas B'chukosai, where we are given a sequence of brachas, which is followed by a lengthy list of things that are not brachos, not pretty. So the pasuk says, Va'achaltem yashan noshan. You will eat something which is old and old. Is that a blessing? You're going to eat old grain? Now, there is a din in halacha called yashan, meaning not eating new grain, but that's a different story, not for today. So he says, I don't understand. Lahavin, to understand. I'm on the first line. Ma'u avtachazu, what is this promise? Ki ma yisro lahem b'yos lahem tvua kol kach. What is the point that they should have yisron, that they should have something extra, that they should have tvua, grain, so much. Shin alef tzadi means she'in tzarech, that you don't need anymore. What do you mean? Why do you need so much grain? You're not going to export it anyway. So why do you need this? And why should it be old? It's going to get old because you have too much. Why do you want so that it should be old? So here he quotes. You ready? Go to the third line. You see a jumble of letters with a bunch of schmitchiks. Ayin pe yud mem shin means al pi masha amar, according to what he said. Chaf kuf kvod kedushas, the holy honorable. Aleph, Mem Vav Resh is Adoni Avi Mori Varabi, my father, my master, my teacher. Zecher Tzadik Levracha Lachai HaOlam Haba. You like that? We should all speak about our elders that way. So it says, this is what I heard from my father. And it doesn't just say my dad, right? It's beautiful. So he says, I heard this from my father. He said the following, Hatam, the reason. The Bizman, at the time, Shebeis HaMikdash Kayim, that the Beis HaMikdash stood, Ein Simcha Ella Bebesar Shlamim, there was no joy. You did not fulfill the mitzvah of celebrating a holiday except for eating the basar. Basar means the meat of a korban. A korban, a sacrifice called a shlamim. Ubizman Azeh, fourth line, and today, Ein Simcha, there's no joy, Ella Beyayin, with wine. Since we don't have the sacrifices due to our lack of the temple at this moment, the way to fulfill the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, of joy on Yom Tov, is to drink some wine. Meat, it's good, and the Rambam expands this to if you have children, you should buy them, you know, presents, candies, etc. But the main mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, of joy on Yom Tov, is to have some wine. Why? Why is the Simcha of Yom Tov today, without the Beis HaMikdash, why is it about wine? So he explains. Here's the key line. Ki Simchas Yom Tov, the joy of Yom Tov, of a holiday, he bipnimius. It's on the inside. It's an inner contentment. The joy of sitting before God and leading a meaningful spiritual life. That's on the inside. That's something that we feel within our hearts, within our souls. He says, you know, and this is a Chassidish Rebbe writing. He says, you know, the Gemara says that there is an Isser, there's a rabbinic restriction against dancing on Yom Tov. Why? Yom Tov, you're supposed to be happy. He says, because dancing, that involves your appendages. It involves the outside. It's an expression of joy which is external. Simchas Torah is an exception on a lot of levels. We do a lot of things on Simchas Torah that are technically, halachically problematic. He says, because when you dance with your feet and with your arms, that's visible to the outside world. The joy of Yom Tov, it's in your heart. It's an inner feeling. He says, that's the difference between basar and yayin. Meat, he says, it's meat is it's a physical entity that you see, and it looks like every other piece of meat. And if you have it, which is holy, that's special simcha. But if you don't have it from a sacrifice, it's like every other meat. But he says, wine is different. What is unique about wine? Look on the next line. V'yayin, start first word on the line is kedusha. V'yayin gam kein hu pnimius. V'yayin ba'anovim mifgad pakid v'nichnas yayin yasa sod. That's what the Avnei Nezer said. Wine, if you see a grape, do you see wine? The wine is inside, it's hidden in the grape. So he's saying that grapes and wine are a parable. They're a mashal. That when you look at wine, you think this was from the inner experience, so to speak, of that grape. That is what Yom Tov is about. Yom Tov is the inner feeling. You don't need the outside of the grape. You need the inside of the yayin. Mifkat pocket, this is a Gemara term from the beginning of Maseches Ksubas. It's in a different context, but he's borrowing it because the wine is trapped, it's carried inside of the grape. He said that's why the main focus of Yantif and the main celebration of wine is to remind us that the inner joy is what's most meaningful. When we think about going to a wedding, what's the joy of the wedding? It's the inner joy. It's the spiritual joy. The Kiddush, the Havdalah. Whenever we take wine, we're supposed to remember that life has an inner core, a spiritual dimension, a spiritual character. And that's why the Gemara has this expression, Nichnas Yayin, wine goes in, Yatza Sod. A person starts to speak their secrets. Because wine relates to the secret. It relates to the hidden. Nichnas yayin yatzasod. And that's why he says wine is very dangerous. Because if a person's inner core is not yet refined, what's going to happen with that wine? It's going to bring out their inner unrefined core. And they may end up like Noach, lo aleinu, drunk, exposed somewhere. He says, our goal is to refine ourselves. And therefore, what do we learn? He says, going back to our original question, anything which is physical, which is external, you know what happens to it over time? It decays. It gets worse. But wine doesn't symbolize the physical external world. It symbolizes the pnimius, the inner world. He says, what happens in the inner world? It gets better with time. Right? In the Jewish tradition, when people get old, they become more respected. Shlomo HaMelech, what was his huge mistake? He was faced with two groups of advisors, the young kids and the older people. So he listened to the young kids and he ended up with no followers. For us, the same way that people get older, they become wiser, they have life experience, that's coming from a spiritual standpoint. Older people, their physical selves start to decay, start to fall apart. You know, you ask older people sometimes, they say, oh, everything is falling apart over here, right? This is falling apart, that's falling apart. I remember my grandfather, Zichron Levracha, my maternal grandfather, when he was older, I had the special privilege of spending time with him. I used to go down by myself. He couldn't even get dressed in the morning. I would help him put on his special, you know, those socks, the long Hasidic socks to keep your blood pressure, you know. But what was it like to spend time with someone like that who was a Zakein That was some of the most priceless times in my life that I have to tell my children, Mirtz Hashem, my grandchildren, great-grandchildren, what he told me when he would go to sleep and he would tell me stories of coming from Europe, from Russia, like what that was like. For a Jewish person, that the body is just a vessel. It's like the outside of the grape. That's not the main thing. The main thing is the neshama, it's the inside. That gets better with time. That's perhaps why Yayin Yashan Shadas Zikanim Nochahimenu, old wine that older people appreciate. Because older people understand. Sometimes kids don't understand. They don't realize the value of people who have life experience. That's the symbol of wine. It's the pneumius, and that never gets, it only gets better with age. It never gets worse with age. So when you think about what we really want out of life, what the real simcha of Yayin, when you go to the Carmel winery, when you make Kiddush, when you make Havdalah, when you pick up a cup of wine, what we're telling ourselves and what we remember in the Zichronos of Zichron, in the memories of Zichron Yaakov, is that the things that are old are actually much better. Because the things that are old, those reflect the pneumius, the inside. The things that are on the outside, the physical things, they decay. They ruin over time. But the things that are on the inside, that goes back to the idea of memory. Those things, they only get better because you add more and more to a person's life experience and to what they represent. So this, I think, that this idea of zichronos fits very well with the idea of wine. Right? The idea of wine is remembering that value of the pneumius, of the inner life, which gets better with age. That's something that we should appreciate. Everybody have a great week. Okay.